Welcome to the Film Rescue Show. We're lending a helpful hypothetical hand to Hollywood in fixing their feature films. Today I'm joined with the fearless and just thankless Jesse, who had to... We'll get into that. Jesse, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Vic.
Love you,
and,
too.
Not to get too ahead of ourselves, but we're rejoined by one of our... I'm going to say probably one of our top pitchers. This is what, your third or fourth episode overall? Vic Grubbs is here.
I'd say closer to five, honestly, at this point.
That sounds right. Yeah. You like to punish us. That's kind of your thing.
You're welcome.
Today.
It's my kink.
Why?
Today we are talking about, and this is a first for the podcast, we're going into the Pirates of the Caribbean series. However, we're jumping in on the
end. You say it as Caribbean?
Caribbean?
I want to say Caribbean.
Pirates of the Caribbean.
Honestly, I say Caribbean for the series. That's it.
I say Caribbean because of the old Muppet sketch where Kermit the Frog sings it.
Okay.
We're jumping in on the shallow end, though, and we're talking about Dead Men Tell No Tales, directed by Joachim Rønning and Espen Sandberg.
The mark of quality.
Oh, yes.
Oh, absolutely.
That's heavy. Gore Verbinski, that guy's a hack.
Oh, hell no. What has he done for cinema?
A movie so good, they needed two directors.
Right.
That's worked like once.
So, I want to preface with, I enjoy the first three Pirates movies. The first one's obviously the gold standard as far as lightning in a bottle. Do we all agree on that one?
Absolutely.
I agree to an extent. I still think the first one is like, 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
It's a little on the long side because when the movie finally is like, it's over, it's like, oh, it's still going. And it's still going. But overall, I like it. It's got charisma. And also, most of the movie is practical.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That is like, oh my God, mark of quality. Like, holy crap. That movie looks amazing.
Oh, yeah. It's so well directed.
For a movie based on a theme park sit-down ride, they kind of hit a home run for that one. Like, it shouldn't have been that good.
Yeah.
It was so. It's like a perfectly well-written movie. Like, it's perfectly written, I think.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Two and three, your mileage may vary. I enjoy them because I like, you know, swashbucklers. I grew up on Errol Flynn because of my dad, and I enjoy those kinds of things. So two and three are good for me.
Good luck following the plot, though.
Oh yeah, yep.
The third one is like 3 hours, dude.
Oh man, yeah. I've recently rewatched all of these just to, you know, get a sense back into it. And I mean, honestly, the first trilogy is formative to me. Like, that was really important to me. But like rewatching it, Jesus Christ, I see why I liked it back when I was a kid. But like, what's happening? Why is anything happening? Why won't it end? Why is the climax 40 minutes? Oh no, the climax started with an hour left.
Why won't the pain stop?
Right.
Then we get to On Stranger Tides, the highest grossing film, or third highest grossing film of 2011. Ugh. Made over $1 billion. Jesus Christ. Ugh. That's where I checked out. That's where I was like, maybe Pirates isn't for me anymore. And when I saw Dead Men Tell No Tales come out, I avoided this one. I'm not going to lie. It looked like exactly what it was. I've never been more accurate on predicting a movie to be what it was than this one. This is the highlights reel of the Pirates movies with zero plot and zero character and zero reason to exist. And Vic, why the 10 minutes. First 10. Can't cuss yet.
I already swore you're going to have to go back and bleep it.
Put a swashbuckling sound over here.
Why are we here, Victor? Why?
Because this movie is a fucking Limp Bizkit of a movie. Like, Jesus Christ. Like I said, Pirates was formative for me, but this one looked bad. Like, that was the same trajectory as you, Seth. On Stranger Tides, I watched it. I didn't even want to watch it. I caught it on TV one day. I was like, okay, well, this is what I thought. Checking out. I was good off of the fifth one. Then, you know, Dead Men Tell No Tales. But I was on a recent Disney Plus binge, and one thing led to another. I was like, might as well check it out, and we'll see if it's, you know, at least an enjoyable bad watch.
Bye, Craig.
Oh, I was wondering what that was.
You jinxed it, Seth.
I used to cut these out of the episodes. Now it's just a running thing. Craig, the recording bot from Discord, just bailed, what, 5 minutes into the episode?
He has something to do, I guess.
Better things on Stranger Tides, I guess.
Honestly, anything is better than Stranger Tides and Dead Men Tell No Tales, because both of those are just, like you said, they're just kind of highlight reel, kind of. And the biggest problem with them both is that, like, they put Jack so much in the forefront. Like, like he's not a main character, and he's never
the secondary character of the other three movies.
He used him sparingly.
Right.
Yeah.
No, but I watched it and it hurt me, and it needs to change. It needs to do better. Like, it needs a spanking.
I have, before we get into the positives and negatives, I have a question for you guys. Has anyone received an easier paycheck than Jeff Zanelli, who did the music for this movie, by just putting on the Hans Zimmer soundtrack and that's it?
He literally just copy pasted it.
And I don't think the Pirates theme actually plays at any point in the middle of the movie. It only plays in the end credits.
Yeah, it's very close. It's very similar. Like, he changed a couple little things, but it is, I mean, it's straight up Hans Zimmer cloning. It's not even secretive about that.
No, it's just the Pirates soundtrack again.
The reason I ask is because in watching the movie, I was like, man, did they really get Hans Zimmer back for a fifth movie? They did not, to be clear.
he was away doing other stuff at the time.
Right. This is what, Interstellar 2017 should have been around.
I think this is Interstellar, yeah.
Yep, he was focused on that.
Let's do positives first, and I do have some things to compliment. Actually, I'll start to give you guys a little runway.
Thanks.
The cast, I'm happy that they're back. I'll put it that way. I'm glad that, like, there's no blatant recastings in this. Brenton Thwaites, I guess is, I think how you say his name. He does look like the child of Elizabeth Swann and Turner, right?
Will Turner.
I mean, that's good casting to be like, yeah, that's a family. I can see that. That looks accurate.
Where else he's from?
What else?
No,
is he
what
from?
Else?
He is Nightwing in Titans.
That's right.
He is Dick Grayson. Yeah. Yep. I thought he looked familiar.
Yep, that's
fuck
him.
Batman.
that's Brenton Thwaites there, and he is.
There you go.
About the same as he is there in here.
Yeah. That casting was good. I was like, okay, this looks accurate. From there, the, like, ghost ship, I like the way that it's kind of a living creature. It doesn't, it's not explained. I don't know if it has to be, but the visual's cool as it, like, unfurls itself and becomes a monster.
Yeah,
that was kind of cool.
I thought it looked like a shark.
Yeah, yeah. And the stealing the bank sequence in a good movie would have been a really good time.
I'm glad you prefaced that with in a good movie.
Yes. Because the idea works, but it's totally disconnected from anything that has to do with anything in the movie.
Yep.
Yeah. It doesn't lead to anything.
It's just the opening gag to introduce all the old characters again.
Well, and this is the thing that drives Aaron insane, right? Is the open your movie on an action sequence to make up for the fact that you have nothing else to open your movie with?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of what it is. But
no interesting characters.
It could be forgivable. Right. Jesse, how about you? Any positives to the film for you?
I'm thinking.
Oh.
I'm really trying with this one. This kind of reminds me a little bit of Pan, and it's like, so what is it Brandon says, non-movie
blunderbuster. Yep.
Yeah, you're kind of forgetting it as you're watching it. So
yeah,
it's the costuming and production design and makeup are always top notch on these things.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, I will say there's it is disappointing that you see the first movie, it's like, oh, it's all practical, it's all locations, and then you see this one, it's like, oh, most of it's green screen. We know where the money went.
That that flashback sequence, oh my god, that was
oh my god,
oh god.
CGI Bukkake, if you've ever seen it.
Oh yeah.
Just all just, over all over it didn't even look like young Johnny Depp, does it? Like,
well, okay, so I'm glad you said that because it's something I wanted to bring up, and I don't know if it's a negative as much as it is like something to look out for in movies. If an actor has been acting since they were very young, you have a really good point of reference for what they look like when they're young, right?
Right. Right. They've been Johnny, in movies.
21-year-old Johnny Depp was in A Nightmare on Elm Street, so just make the character look like that. Instead of younger but still alcoholic, bloated Johnny Depp.
Man.
But
yeah.
This is the positives, so.
We're in positives, unfortunately.
There's a bit I liked, the guillotine scene.
Oh, yeah, that's fun.
Damn, you stole mine, Jesse.
That was pretty good.
That was my one.
It doesn't make any sense why the platform would be spinning, but
yeah.
it's goofy and it's fun, but yeah, that's all I got. I really struggled to finish this movie because I was like, it's like, oh, it's only 2 hours, oh, but then I was watching it, I was like, why is it the shortest one but it feels the longest?
Oh my god, it like, because we'll talk about it.
Mm-hmm. It was your turn, Vic.
Was Javier Bardem like was Javier Bardem just totally wasted in this movie?
Oh, he looks so fucking blitzed the entire time, dude.
Okay.
Christ.
Well, he probably was. The thing is, I watched the behind-the-scenes documentary, and first of all, I want to say that the only thing everybody said was pretty much, hey, it's good to see everybody again. That was literally very different variations of that. But anyway.
Yeah.
Javier Bardem actually said, he probably was drunk, but he actually said his character, I don't know if you, I was wondering if you guys got this too, that he was a, you know, he came up with the idea that he was the matador when he was alive, and then when he was dead, he was the wounded bull.
Hmm.
He said he said he asked about that, and they were like, yeah, sure. And that's what he kind of went with. And I was wondering if you guys got that from his performance.
No.
It sounds like he invested more in the movie than the movie invested in the movie.
Exactly. He probably did that, but the directors and cinematographer and the DP probably didn't want to do that as well. So,
well, I mean, even Johnny Depp wasn't invested. Apparently, he was having his lines fed to him through an earpiece.
I can tell.
Ooh. Yeah, his lines were fed to him through an earpiece, and apparently, he was drinking constantly and showing up like 8 hours late on set.
Jesus.
That's why the budget on this movie is so bloated, yet the movie looks so cheap. Most of the money went to him.
Ooh, that's
you can tell when something went wrong when on the Wikipedia entry, the budget is between 230 and 320 million.
That's
guys,
a big wide margin of error, okay?
What the fuck?
That's not $1 million dollars of difference there.
Are we 10 minutes in?
Yes, we are.
Okay, yeah, what the fuck?
I've been swearing the entire time. Seth's going to have to go back and bleep all that crap, okay?
I will, I promise.
Put sword clanging over top of it.
Yeah. Any other positives there, Vic?
I didn't get that. I didn't have any yet. Okay, this is going to be slightly mean and backhanded, but I believe Johnny Depp was drunk, and it actually helped in the scenes where Jack was supposed to be washed up, because he looked washed up. Like,
is it in bad taste to say that Johnny Depp is really good at playing a washed up has been?
I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's a bad taste.
Is it method acting if it's true?
Exactly. Like he's drawing on personal experience. That's what actors do.
Yeah.
There you go.
He needs his resurgence moment. He needs his big comeback movie.
I'm very curious if he'll ever get that, because it's been such a downward slope for like so long.
Was this around the time the Amber Heard stuff started to come out?
Yeah. So this is like kind of working in tandem along with all of that.
Yeah, because I noticed the Lindsay Ellis, the YouTuber, did a video basically about this one movie and how it was the decline and fall of the Pirates franchise. It got pulled. Apparently, wow. It's no longer on YouTube. I'm guessing she pulled it down because apparently Amber Heard was the aggressor in their relationship. Oh. as it's finally come out.
Yeah.
Thankfully, Amber Heard's been fired from Aquaman 2. Finally.
Hell yeah. She probably...
Why Warner sat on that for so long? I just don't get it.
Yeah. It's one of those things where, like, we'll probably never know. I know their divorce started in 2016, which was during the filming of this, so... It was probably getting uglier and uglier as they went along.
Yeah, let's just say they were toxic for each other.
Yeah.
But this, you know, this was around the time that this was probably happening, and it shows. Like, you can kind of see it on Depp's face. He's not really invested. He's doing this for the paycheck.
Yeah.
This come out 2017.
Gotta pay that wine bill.
Oh, man. Yeah. That's...
Well, the film was shot in 2016, came out in 2017.
Okay, gotcha.
So this is right on the cusp of the divorce.
And
right.
Aquaman was 2018?
Yes, because it was 1 year after Justice League.
Yep.
Okay.
The original cut.
Okay.
The bad one, quote unquote?
Question mark? We'll find out.
I guess we'll find out. Honestly, the end result is probably going to be they're both bad. For different reasons.
No shit.
We shall see. I feel like we tease it every episode by accident.
It's 4 hours long, damn it.
And you know he's just throwing everything he came up with in there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Kid in a candy shop. So is the reason for you picking this movie because it was so bad that you feel like you could mess around with the plot elements, or is... the excuse just to do a new kind of pirates movie, I guess, is my question.
My reasoning for doing this was to pop. What company is this? It's a Disney. Okay,
Disney.
Pop Disney. Yeah, to pop Disney on the hand for doing stuff like this, trying, because you know, setting up the two young, attractive. main people to be the next generation. Also kids of previous generation.
Yeah.
To take on and be, you know, the next guys and take on the franchise and continue making money for them. And I want to tell them to stop that, because even if you do want to continue on, you don't just recycle. Oh, this is the next crop. Get them in there. Like that's not how you continue a story. And I just want this to be the Last Jedi of pirates.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Expand on that.
I want this to be. I want audiences to think they're gonna get what they want, and then, have it turned so that until we reach the point where my main
You want us to subvert expectations.
Yes, but and exactly. And my main thrust of this was let go of what how you expect things to be, so that you can get what's meant for you, what's actually meant to be.
Interesting. I ask as we transition into negatives, because I was saying before we jumped on air, this is kind of just like a reboot highlight reel of the Pirates series. Like, it's... the characters are coming back, and they're in different places than when we first saw them. But by the end of this film, we are literally at the same place we were at the end of the first Pirates movie, but 20 years later.
It's the same plot. It's zombie pirates. It's the same
plot.
That's
exactly. That's what I was saying. Like, we've seen zombie pirates three different times.
Why do they keep going back to this well?
Yeah, like, try something else, anything else.
There's got to be something else you can pull from, dude.
Well, because it's not like we're at a loss for mariner's tales within the ocean, right?
Like, right. There was that TV show Black Sails. Like, they got, like, five good seasons out of that? How many seasons was that? Four or five? Like, there's all this content they could pull from.
Right. Yeah, I think that was maybe the most disappointing part for me, was getting to the end and going, wait, so... they just reset the status quo, and now we're at the same place we were in the first movie. Mm-hmm. This feels useless.
Yeah, it is useless.
Bring Jack back, and then bring them back, and then have literally the same adventure again, probably somehow including the Flying Dutchman.
Yep. Can I bring up one big negative that has always pissed me off with all these movies?
Sure.
Why is it that everyone just happens to keep bumping into each other randomly all the time, no matter what situation it is? Like, it seems like everybody is a hop, skip, and a jump away from each other.
The Caribbean is a small ocean, I guess? I don't know.
No, it's fucking not, you asshole! No, it's fucking not!
And it's not like you can randomly find people. Like, you have to follow rumors back in this day. Like, that's the best you can do.
Yeah.
Right. Like, to a degree, I can understand, like, there's, you know, currents and trade paths and things like that, but it's not, they're not streets. This isn't, you're not locked into the same, you know, 10 feet of asphalt as you move around.
Yeah, right. I've always said, like, you get one gimme moment in each movie, but they asked for, like, 5 of them or 10 of them in this movie.
Oh, man, it's a series built on it, especially after the first one. It's got, like, it's exponentially worse.
The first one, and I was talking about this in the Discord. The first one's very easy to follow because the setup is there's a curse that was put on these coins. Anyone who had the coin got cursed. Super easy. Like, this is very easy to follow stuff. And they don't just run across each other in the ocean. They run across each other at locations. So they don't just bump into each other on the water. They're either chasing each other or they arrive at the same place at different times. So,
right.
Hey, that makes sense. Versus this movie where Barbossa just finds the Black Pearl at sea.
Yeah, well, you know.
Sure.
Like you said, it's a small ocean. Right? It's a small sea, right?
Yeah. I agree, Jesse. To your point, 100%. It does not make sense at all.
Or no. Just like Jack's crew that ditched him. They're in a little dinghy, like just pushing their way through the ocean, and then just happen to see the Black Pearl in the distance, and they're like, "Oh, we're gonna catch up to it." Like, wait a minute, you're gonna catch up to that?
You're not. Is
in a rowboat?
You're not.
No.
But no, it's whatever needs to happen just will happen so that they can get on to the next action scene.
Because the movie needed to happen.
Which are fucking terrible, by the way, but again, negatives.
So let's get into some of the negatives here, guys. We've already covered that it's very slow for being a little over 2 hours.
It's the shortest of all of these movies.
Yeah, weirdly. Yeah. here was my main... Like, if I had to actually, like, pinpoint a plot hole, is the compass cursed, or does the compass follow a curse? Also, how did Salazar's crew become zombie ghosts? Because just, like, red energy enters the ocean and converts them, and it's never explained where that came from or why the compass is connected to it.
No, Seth, it's the Devil's Triangle, and that's all you need.
Okay, but that's a separate issue because how did they get stuck in the Devil's Triangle and why could they not leave until the compass changed hands? Also, didn't he give the compass to Elizabeth Swann in the third movie?
He surely did. He surely did.
And that
he gave it to Will in the third movie. He gave it to Elizabeth in the second movie and Will in the third movie.
Yeah, and so that didn't break the Devil's Triangle?
No, because they didn't think of it. Matter. They didn't think of it yet.
This isn't deep lore or anything. This is like magic and curses. This should be really easy to follow.
Yeah, just follow basic, like, what you've already established. You can do pretty much anything else is magic.
This feels like a Pirates of the Caribbean movie written by people that didn't like the other movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We can do it better and shorter.
It almost feels like a fan movie where they got the whole cast to come back, but then they were like, but fuck all those other movies. We're going to do our own thing here. We're just going to start from scratch, but also keep some of the lore around for reasons.
It doesn't work. It just doesn't work.
No.
It doesn't work on any level as a movie, as a script, as a production, or as a piece of art.
Art.
It doesn't work to sell.
Right.
It doesn't work to sell the parts. Like,
what is the opposite of art?
Trash.
Yeah.
Sure.
Just add an SH and there you go. You got it.
Jesse, what did not work about this movie for you?
Jesus Christ, the green screen in this movie is fucking terrible.
Oh my God.
Like I said, the beginning of this episode, I was like, the first movie is mostly practical. There's very little green screen. It was all on location. It was all on actual ships.
And it's so beautiful. It looks so good now.
Isn't the ocean free to film on? There's no taxes for using the ocean, right?
No, it depends if you're in maritime or not.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but you still don't want to work on the ocean because people get sick. Also because you have a lot of equipment. Cameras can get damaged. Salt water can ruin everything. So it's the four rules of filmmaking are you don't want to work with kids, animals, on the water, or in the snow. Kids, animals, and the water are unpredictable, and snow, you can't maintain the color temperature.
Spielberg did all of those, except the snow, maybe.
Yeah, because he's a fucking badass.
Well, yeah, that's all true, yes.
it's working on the water is very difficult, but they did it. Like, they did it in those first couple of movies. They did it. I don't remember much from this third movie. I know it was a lot of green screen in that one, a lot of CGI.
Yeah, but it was also the expensive CGI that they spent good money on. Really, the only thing I didn't like that much was Tia Dalma growing into Calypso. It was kind of a weird effect. But
and then turning into crabs.
and then melting into crabs, yes. But who everything was else was pretty good.
Was that the witch lady?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yep.
The one I couldn't understand her accent, so I was just like, I don't know who the fuck this is. I don't know what you're saying.
Not Zoe Saldana.
Not Zoe Saldana. Yeah, that's right. No. The only reason I saw the second one is because I was out on a date and I was like, well, this is in theaters. I'll go on this. And the third one I saw because, like, well, I'm already invested now. I'll go see it. And I struggled to get through the third one. So,
yeah,
that movie is like so long. I didn't see the fourth one. So when I saw this one and I was like, what the fuck is Barbossa doing? And I realized, oh, I haven't seen the fourth one. I don't know what the hell's going on.
The thing is, the fourth one, they don't even like keep continuity because isn't Barbossa a privateer?
Yeah, so and also they never explain why he has a peg leg. He just shows up in the fourth one with a peg leg.
Yes.
The only crossover from the fourth one is that the Black Pearl got shrunk down into that bottle. That is the only connective tissue.
Yep. Yep, literally. We don't see the mermaid, so the merman again.
I didn't miss much then.
No.
You did not. You could.
It honestly was like a really boring dream.
You missed Penelope Cruz doing her best Johnny Depp impression.
Oh, fuck. I forgot she was in that movie. Oh, yeah. That's how Javier Bardem got in there because he was on set for the fourth one. He was like, this looks fun.
Right. I bet he regretted that when he was on the set for this one.
Right. Or he was more like, this looks like a free paycheck, an easy paycheck.
Yeah. I mean, that Disney money, it always rolls in.
That's mm-hmm. true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, just this movie is so devoid of just any emotional investment.
Like I said this earlier in the Discord, but when I watched that behind the scenes footage, everybody was dead behind the eyes. Jerry Bruckheimer was especially like, I don't want to be here. He said everything.
Well, I think
that was
around that point where he was getting pulled from the franchise because The Lone Ranger had come out not too long before this.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why this one was in development hell for so long, too.
Yeah, because he got the Lone Ranger. And by the way, Lone Ranger, no. what's the point?
Oh, we'll fixed next. That one, actually. That was, I think, season one or two. I fixed that one.
Okay. All right. Never mind. Good. I don't want to touch it. But yeah, like The Lone Ranger came out and it was a massive bomb and got terrible reviews. And like this one got stuck in hell because of that. And it really kind of knocked Jerry Bruckheimer down a bunch of pegs. It kind of showed that maybe his ability to choose good, profitable projects was waning.
Is he still working?
He's still working. Oh, yeah, he's still around. But he's definitely been knocked down a few pegs.
See, this is the thing that I've complained about before on the show. The red in the ledger or the egg on the face never sticks to the producers. They just get to keep working regardless of how much.
Yeah.
Without like a monumental, like Harvey Weinstein situation, they can't be tanked. They just, the buck gets passed to everyone else.
It's not because the movie is bad. It's because it's misunderstood.
Right.
Like, BBS isn't bad. The audience just didn't understand it. They just didn't appreciate it on an intricate intellectual level.
Honestly, producers don't get much blame from really at all, do they? Like, it's really mostly the directors, like, if anything, right?
Yeah, usually the director takes all the blame. But the producers are the ones that create the project in the first place.
Yeah.
Exactly.
They're the ones
together.
That get the money.
Yeah. Like, you can't do anything without a producer that works, that you work well with, you know, that wants to do well with the project. Like,
exactly. Yeah.
Director handles the film, but the producer is the one bankrolling the film and pulling all the strings.
Exactly. That's who you go to for your money. That's who you go to figure out who you can hire, what you can get. Like, if that's not working, then the movie's not going to be good.
Yeah, exactly.
Unless you're like a genius of like coming up with whatever you have, like John Carpenter, just, you know, nothing.
Carpenter tends to produce his own films too, so he gets that much more control.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. He's an independent filmmaker.
Exactly. Yeah. So, Dead Men Tell No Tales, probably the most cash grabby of all the films. To me, it's like just to keep the IP around, I guess. That was the only thing I could
grab. Keep it relevant. Keep it relevant within the world.
Because there was no passion. Like, the screenplay had to be thrown together in 2 days, like, if that. Like, it was like a first outline. Not even the first draft, just the first outline. And, you know,
well, that's clearly not true, because apparently this was in development for a long time.
Well, so the big issue was they didn't want to bankroll the $300 million-plus budget that the last one had been.
Yeah.
So it just sat for a while. It wasn't like they were continually developing it or something like that.
Why do these movies cost this much?
Hey, good question.
$250 million? Are you fucking kidding me?
Probably a lot of superfluous CGI.
You could rebuild a third world nation with this money.
Yeah. Think about that sometimes.
And instead we got this.
How many $10 million Pirates movies could you get and still earn that billion on the back end if you split this into 30 movies?
Seth, do me a favor.
Yeah.
Go to Wikipedia, look up the budget for Cutthroat Island.
Sure.
I'm just curious. What was the budget of Cutthroat Island compared to the budget of this film? Adjusted for inflation, of course.
This is the Gina Davis film.
That's the one.
$98 million.
$98 million. What year was that made?
This was made in 1995.
So adjusted for inflation, that's around the same budget as this.
Yeah, pretty big budget.
Yeah. Don't do this. Just to all businessmen out there, don't do this. This is a bad idea. Unless it's guaranteed to make money, like an Endgame or something like that, don't do this.
Yeah, like get somebody creative. To get creative solutions with, you know, a decent budget.
Like, we get it. We know you love cocaine, but there are easier ways to get it.
That's probably where a lot of budget goes, honestly.
There was a time in Hollywood where you could actually go to a film set, and if you've been working for a long period of time, you could get a hold of somebody, and they would come to the set with a suitcase, and they would just go, well, what do you want? What do you need?
Yeah.
Wow.
I am not making that up.
Is that what Caesar's about?
Apparently, any movie the Belushis worked on had cocaine in the budget. Like,
yes,
like not even illegally. It was just like extraneous expenses, aka cocaine budget.
Yeah, cocaine budget, because Belushi was a massive cocaine addict, as we all know, because he died from it.
Woo, boy.
Rest in peace.
Rest in peace, John Belushi.
How big was the cocaine budget in Mario, I wonder?
Good question.
I don't think there was a cocaine budget. There was an alcohol budget. I know that.
True.
John Leguizamo and Bob Hoskins were drinking excessively on that film.
I'm sure.
As they should have.
I'm absolutely sure. So I have some questions overall. Jesse, you mentioned taking the risk on an end game. What does it feel like the lore of this series has been building to, or what should it have building to? Maybe that's the better question. Like, what do you...
The death of Jack Sparrow.
Right?
Like, that's what it should be building towards. Like, you know, he's the best quote unquote pirate of the ocean. Like he's considered a legend to so many people, and he has to finally prove that. And then, you know, the whole movie is about him finally proving that. But instead, we just get him bumbling around most of the time. Like, everything he does in this movie is on accident.
Yes. There's so much luck. Nobody is good at anything in this movie. Like, except
no one's competent. Everyone's a doddering idiot.
In the first, okay, the execution scene. First of all, when Henry swings in and is the joke, like, you know, oh, he's bad at saving people. Cool, whatever. But then when the executioner is about to kill him, Karina just kicks him off the edge. Like, not even the bad guys are competent. Just while she's tied up with the noose around her neck, and he's just walking by, she just lightly kicks him on the side, and he falls, and he's done for. Like,
you know what this movie feels like? I just realized. It feels like a Disney Channel movie.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
It feels like that, with a very big budget.
Yep. You're absolutely right.
My question overall... Let me preface with, the biggest mistake they made was making Jack Sparrow a main character instead mm-hmm. of a side character, because
mm-hmm. yes,
he has to have character growth if he is to be a main character. And mm-hmm. how do you improve on alcoholic pirate Deadpool? You know what I mean? Like, there's nowhere for him to go, so they actually have to like reverse him to this point of lowness for him to recover to anything. But then my second question is, beyond the bank robbery, what does he want, need, or is trying to do in this movie?
Get drunk.
Okay. I recently rewatched it, just like an hour ago, and they very offhandedly mentioned it very quickly. Henry mentioned actually that, Salazar was coming for him. So they needed the trident. I guess he said it was the only way to protect. That was his only option. I'm guessing to protect himself. They didn't specify, but that's pretty much the only motivation they gave.
But everybody wants this goddamn trident, but they never really say what the fuck it actually really does.
It's so vague. He controls the sea. Like, what?
It will give you complete control of the ocean. Well, what does that mean? It turns me into fucking Aquaman? Like, right. What does it do?
I'm so confused. Like, give me
a reason.
Yes, explain. We need some rule, any rule, like, you know, something to look, some base, some grounding thing, you know.
Yeah.
Because if you ask me, Jack Sparrow's point in this movie is to ferry the two younger characters to the trident. That's it.
Yeah.
The only driving force in the movie is Henry needing the trident to break his dad's curse.
Which technically is what he did in the first movie. He's just there to sort of help, Will Turner help rescue Elizabeth.
Right.
Oh,
he's there as a secondary character. He's helping along the side, but he's not the focal point of the film.
Exactly.
Right. Exactly.
Sparingly.
Even in Black Pearl, his mission is to get the pearl back. Like, he has a very clear objective within the film.
And one other thing.
Yeah, but also... Why doesn't he like spend most of his time in this movie just trying to get the pearl back? He has it
right
in a bottle. Just crack the fucking thing open.
I think they need a Barbossa's sword or something. Some bullshit.
Oh, whatever.
Some bullshit.
Some bullshit. That's basically how everything is written off in this movie. Oh, it needs some bullshit to make it work.
Literally,
some
that's
bullshit.
It. Literally, nothing means anything.
Something else that bothered me a ton. Is the ever increasing and changing powers of the ghost crew.
Oh, Jesus.
Because they get introduced as they can't leave the triangle until the curse is broken. And then when they leave the triangle, they can't go on to dry land for reasons. And I'm saying that because the movie never explains what their curse is.
No. It doesn't even explain what the curse even came from.
They just say, you know, you get it. You've seen it in other movies. Same deal.
And then the movie goes out of its way to say, if Salazar possesses someone, he doesn't get to come back. Except for he possesses...
5 minutes later.
Yep.
He possesses Henry and then gets to come back.
Yep.
So why weren't they possessing people this whole time? It, like, isn't that the more interesting movie? This like body hopping ghost movie. It's like
is,
Ghostbusters 2. You know what I mean?
That is
like
so
somebody's
funny
gonna
you
get
say that,
possessed
Seth.
And like that's the more interesting thing to happen if you're going if you have to do pirate ghosts, like have them take over a naval crew or something like that, and then it's like you have a rogue ship that's taking people down and it doesn't make sense why, and maybe it's a character that we know. I don't know. What was the name of the Jack Davenport as Norrington, Commodore Norrington.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
He's turned evil. Nobody knows why. Well, they're possessed by pirate ghosts. Like, that's so much, easier.
Much more interesting, different villain.
Yeah.
Because regardless of, you know, that yes, they're supernatural, but they're still living thing people. Like, you have to fight actual people that, you know, have lives at home. That's interesting. And it's not the same as zombie pirates.
And then, oh, and this might have been my biggest eye roll of the movie. Not 5 minutes into the film does Javier Bardem go, "Dead men tell no tales," and it's like,
oh, they put the title on the movie.
And they cut right to that, and they cut right to the title sequence after that. Like, they were proud of it.
But then he says it as if that's part of his curse. But what does that mean? He can't communicate directly to Jack because of reasons? Like, I hate that this whole movie is just reasons and bullshit.
It really is just that. It's like, whatever looks good, sounds good at the time, we'll go with that and we'll figure it out on the way. Like, it's not how you write a movie.
The most interesting part of this entire film is Karina being called a witch because she's into science, which is like, accurate for the time period. That's the most interesting part of the entire thing. Also leads to my favorite joke in the whole movie of a woman's never touched my Herschel before, and I was like, eh, I get it, it's a dick joke.
I'm happy you were happy.
Can we talk about the kind of misogynistic tone of this movie?
Oh,
sure.
Because What the hell is her name? The Elizabeth Swann stand-in?
Karina. Yeah.
Karina, yeah. Who's apparently that actress is supposed to play Claire Redfield in the Resident Evil movie that's coming up.
I saw that.
Good choice.
Also interesting.
Finally, they're getting it right. They're getting it right, finally. Thank Christ. So there's this constant, everyone's always hitting on her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does that bug anybody else?
I mean, it was...
Because she's kinda the woman in the movie, and therefore they all have to hit on her.
It's kind of been the whole Pirates movie. I mean, this annoys me with all the Pirates movies. Like, Elizabeth was mostly a tool, like, to be... Not a tool, but, you know, something to be passed between people. Like, she got kissed by so many people so many times without her initiating it once in the third one.
That was like, 2003.
Yeah, so, I'll do you one better, Jesse. The timeline of this film, Barbossa gave her up as an orphan after the events of the third film.
Oh my God.
So like the whole backstory there of like, I was low and down on my luck. It's like, dude, the fuck you were. You left that movie a king.
Yeah. Like, you had the Black Pearl, you had a crew, you had most of a map. And you just beat the East India Trading Company. You're good.
Right.
I mean, it's like we've been saying, this movie is just, nothing matters. Like, this is like a soft reboot.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah,
exactly.
Literally,
like,
it uses
elements of the previous movies, but doesn't stick to the lore very tightly. So, fuck it.
Yeah, well, they cherry pick what they want.
As I was reading that, like, Elizabeth Swann was going to come back and Will Turner was going to come back. Like, I was reading the background of the movie before I even watched it, and I was like, oh, okay, cool. So they got, like, the gang back together. The fuck they did? It's just Johnny Depp.
Like, wait, does Barbossa even... How much screen... I guess he gets the second most screen time out of the whole crew?
Sure.
Because Henry... Yeah. I mean, because Will is, like, in one
scene. How much time does he actually get with Karina?
Right.
Oh, a scene?
Like, that's supposed to be his daughter, and it's like that they have a scene together.
One singular scene.
That was the basis of, like, a really emotional moment for the movie. and for us. It was supposed to take us. That's because the music swelled. You know, the music we've heard in all the other movies, it swelled. So we were supposed to feel
not,
things.
Not even a C for effort, okay?
Yeah.
Right. Because you didn't try. There was no effort.
Get it? Do you get it? A C for effort?
Jesus Christ. But yes, we got to have the dad jokes.
I wish the running thing in the series was the thing that popped up in this movie, Paul McCartney popping in to be Jack Sparrow's
Why?
Uncle. Well, because his dad is who's that other rock star?
Keith Richards.
Like, it's just like all of his family's famous musicians dressed up as pirates. I wish That's that funny. Was the running thing in the movie.
That'd be pretty funny.
Yeah.
Does anybody else have trouble understanding Salazar's when he spoke? Like, it wasn't even the accent. It was like the hissing for me. Like, was that just me?
He constantly whispers.
Yeah.
I have subtitles on because my hearing is not so great these days. Mm. But I always have subtitles on. But I can understand, like, he's always kind of talking like this.
That's a pretty good impersonation.
Can you please just speak up? Please.
No, he's the wounded bull, remember?
Oh, whatever.
And okay, so I might need you guys' help for this. He hates Jack Sparrow because they had an encounter back when he was taking out pirates and Jack Sparrow won? Did I miss something there?
I guess he was just mad that he lost and got trapped by a young kid or something.
Okay, so second question, that one encounter made him hate Jack Sparrow enough to stick around as a ghost for indeterminate at least 40 plus years, right? Because 20 years have passed since the first movie.
Yeah.
And also, Jack Sparrow should be like 60 by this point, right?
Oh, yeah, no, there's no way he should be pirating. He should be looking like Barbossa.
Right.
Yeah. Also, can I point this out? When Salazar is doing his, you know, how I became the way I am, his final battle situation, that's his story from his perspective. Why the fuck did we get Jack Sparrow's backstory at the same time when he wasn't in the same area to tell that story? I understand giving a little leeway for, what is it, creative license, but Jesus Christ, like, we got an entire backstory for a totally different character while he's trying to tell his own story.
Yeah.
This script sucks, dude.
Mm-hmm. It was written by, I pulled it up, Jeff Nathanson, who has done
also known Tower as Heist. Hack McFuckstick. Also known as Hack McFuckstick.
He wrote Tower Heist, Rush Hour 3, Indiana Jones and the Kingdom Skull.
No!
The Lion King.
Remake. The Lion King remake.
Remake. Clarify that.
Sorry, the Lion King remake. Catch Me If You Can and Rush Hour 2, actually. That's not bad. Speed 2, also.
Oh.
Oh, no, that's it. You can stop there.
And that's pretty much there. It. So this is who was working on this script.
Who's that guy that we always go after, that writer that did the three
fucking
Transformers
Kurtzman,
movies?
Right?
Oh, Alex Kurtzman.
Kurtzman.
Not Kurtzman, the other guy.
Oh.
Fuck, what the hell is his name?
We go after,
he wrote Ghost in the Shell.
Oh, okay, hold on.
Oh, God.
I've called this guy out so many times.
If you type in Transformers in Wikipedia, there's just so much stuff here.
Okay.
Oh, Aaron Kruger.
There you go. Kruger.
Oh,
that
Kruger.
That douchebag. Like, we could probably lump this dude in with Aaron Kruger because... Fuck this dude.
Wait, what else has he written?
Are you sure you want to know?
Yeah.
No, you don't need to know anything else.
Gotcha.
So on top of Ghost in the Shell, the Dumbo remake, all of the Transformers movies, Scream 3, a.k.a. the really bad one.
Yeah, I went on a deep dive recently, and wow, that was a drop.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Can we talk about real quick how dumb it is? How dumb their plan is to defeat the villain? Like,
what plan?
What plan?
The hint was something about dividing, right?
Yeah.
And then they just slice it in half with a sword.
That was a straight up Indiana Jones, the penitent man moment where, like,
yeah,
it gets figured out, like, in the exact second it needs to be figured out.
Yes.
You don't just kneel, you gotta roll, too.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, Jack was being stabbed, and, like, why didn't... So that hadn't happened, nobody tried to slice it in half before? You didn't think to do that at first, like, to smash it?
You say that as if the trident had more than 3 minutes of time on screen.
Oh, Jesus.
That's also true.
I will say one positive I had is that it's a different look for Poseidon's trident.
Okay.
That was cool. I was like, oh, that was pretty good.
Yeah, totally. I mean, like, that kind of world building of, like, it looks ancient. It looks like it could be, like, ancient aliens kind of technology. Totally. Like,
mm-hmm.
I wish I could have seen it for the whole movie.
That would have been fun. You could see maybe I actually did, maybe.
Yeah, what if they could have controlled the ocean for the entire movie instead of just the end where they split the ocean like Prince of Egypt?
Yeah, and all Salazar does just kind of fling Johnny Depp around in it. Like,
right.
Kill him. Like, it's so easy. Just drop the ocean
on him. By the way, so they want the trident in order to lift their curse.
Yes.
So everyone's racing to this trident.
Yeah.
They lift the curse, and all the Spaniards are freed of their curse.
Wait.
So
that's what he wanted in the first place. Wait, what?
Yeah, you got what you wanted regardless of whatever happened.
Yeah, you could have just so sat back and they would have destroyed the trident anyway.
Again,
father.
The point of the movie is to arrive back at point A. Like the
yeah, exactly. Exactly.
What is it Aaron referred to it as? An A to A movie? Yes. Like Quantum of Solace? Like, funny. We know where we're going, but we're still going to go anyways. Mm-hmm.
We're going to take this long 2-hour journey.
Long, pointless 2-hour journey.
That's the best way to sum up this movie.
This long, pointless 2-hour journey.
It's like when you end in the same place as the beginning, what was the fucking point? What don't people get about that? Change the status quo.
Right.
Or end the story. Well, which would be changing status quo, probably.
It's extra frustrating that, like, we have characters come back like Gibbs, who's been around since the first fucking movie, mm-hmm. and it's like, give them their time to shine now, this crew who's stuck around for 5 movies at this point. Like,
yeah,
give them
absolutely.
Their time to shine. And instead, it's like, he was, like, the back of the back burner. He was, like, the grease trap on the stove of back burners.
As far as
characters
upsetting.
Go.
Because, well, first of all, great analogy, but it's so upsetting because, looking at the behind the scenes, he's the one that knew everything. Kevin McNally, the person who played Gibbs, he's the one who knew everything. And, like, the two new people, they said, he came up to them first day, he was like, anything you need, anything you know, I got you and I'll help you, because he's been on this movie, he knows everything. And, like, for an example, the actress who played Karina, she said, okay. And he was like, nope, can't say that. That's not historically accurate. Can't say that. So you got to find something else to say. Mm. Like, stuff like that. Like, he was into it. He's been into it. Like, he's putting in the grunt work for years and knows so much.
I have one final question for you guys before we go to break, because this was like the moment that could have led to a meltdown if I allowed myself to think about it too hard. Henry shows up to the execution to save Karina, who he knows has the information to get him to the trident, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he shows up there because he's working with Jack's crew, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
When did he meet that crew? Guys.
Off screen. It got told to you in dialogue. Off screen. He gave us 10 silver shillings to some come rescue you.
Exactly.
How the fuck did he find them, though? How did he know that they were there? They were his crew.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
I will say it was a slightly funny scene. When
in
Jack
a vacuum,
was like,
in a vacuum, that scene's great. Like, it feels like a pirates scene.
Mm-hmm. And the joke where he's like, where Jack's like, pay me to rescue me.
Right.
That was pretty funny.
Yeah.
But it was in a dumb movie, so it was dumb. And.
If I have to use the qualifier in a vacuum, it means that I'm vacuuming the rest of your movie out.
Right. Nice. Oh wait. I have one more quick complaint. Well,
oh, sure.
The editing. My God.
Oh, God. Don't even.
God. I smoked earlier, and I rewatched it at the beginning. I had to stop for a second. I almost felt sick. I was like, what is happening? That first scene where the pirates, where the ghost pirates attacked the British Navy or whatever.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell what the fuck was happening. I just heard noises and shouts and movement.
I thought, yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up. Was it just me, or was the opening like 10 minutes of this movie like extra dark?
Oh my God. Yes. This is the least colorful Pirates movie they've ever done.
It is so ugly.
Yeah, it's an ugly movie. From the CG to the color palette, it's ugly.
Look at the poster for this thing. It's like nothing but blue and gray.
Yeah.
Aren't
they in the most colorful area on like the planet?
Yes, it's the Caribbean.
Yes, it's so beautiful out there. Jesus Christ. Like, St. Martin has the most beautiful autumn I've ever seen in my life. Go there.
Oh, I do actually. I wanted to point out there's one genuinely great shot in the film, and it's all CGI. But when they arrive at the island where they're going to split the ocean, all the glowing rocks in the island make it look like outer space. And it, the one thing I will compliment is that looked awesome.
Okay. Yeah, well, that looking down shot, and it looks like the stars in the sky, and it's them walking across that. Are they diamonds? Are they rubies?
Unclear. I think rubies was what was tossed around the most, right?
Why is nobody like pillaging this place?
It's the island no one can find because it's from a map that no one can read.
Take all the shit you can before you leave, dude.
No man can read. The woman read it. Yes. Remember?
Yeah.
No man can defeat me.
That leads to another thing that kind of slightly annoyed me in this movie was the we here on this show, we are all in favor of gender equality and racial equality. We are in favor of that. But this movie like bends over backwards to placate women in the audience by making her the main focus and everyone else is just an idiot.
Yes, it's performative activism. It's performative. Like,
yeah,
that's the scene where he was like grabbed her and she was talking about how he was grabbing her butt. That's all the proof you need.
Yeah, it's activism on like the most minimal level.
Mm-hmm.
Like she is the main focus, but she is a nothing character.
Yeah,
she's more of a plot device than anything else.
Right.
Yeah, they're doing it because they think it'll get them appreciated.
Right.
Yeah, because we need to, you know, we need to try to provide entertainment for that side of the audience too.
God forbid.
It can't be a sausage fest.
She was great in Crawl.
The same girl.
Oh, yeah, the alligator movie.
Oh, is the same girl. You're right.
Alligator Jaws. Yep.
She was great in that. She was really good. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's a good movie too.
Yeah, I like that movie.
I really like it. Yeah,
me too. Well, that's a good positive note to end this episode about Pirates of the Caribbean on. Watch Crawl.
Yeah,
you'll have it.
Watch Crawl or watch the first Pirates of the Caribbean. We sometimes say like some of these movies are good if you're drunk or high. Mm. This isn't even good enough for that.
No, it's not. Nope. It's not. There's nothing good about this. It's a lame.
This is absolutely boring in every way. This movie is 2 hours long. It took me 4 hours to sit through this thing.
Yeah. Because
I kept stopping because I was so bored.
It is.
There's no like narrative thrust. There's no like drive. It's just.
It's one of the most flaccid movies I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah. Flaccid as a porn star that's already gotten off 4 times in a row. It's all it is.
Yep. There we go.
Yeah. It ain't worth it. This ain't worth it, man.
Do not watch it.
Agreed. There's just no, you can't even roast it. It's not like it's incompetently bad. It's just fucking boring.
It's limp.
Yeah.
It's a limp biscuit.
This is just like, it's just like Pan. There's nothing to talk. There's nothing really to talk about. It's just we're annoyed that it's not as good as the other ones.
And at least they didn't break out in Nirvana songs.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a quick break, and then when we come back, Vic is going to pitch us a different Pirates 5.
Mm-hmm.
But first, here's a word from one of our friends.
Hi, I'm Micah McCaw.
I'm Jordan McCaw.
And we host the McCaw Podcast Universe. We cover film franchises, and we exist to prove people wrong when they say that sequels are never better than the originals.
We are a weekly podcast that takes on film franchises. In each franchise, we talk about which movies work, which movies don't work, and we analyze how the franchise fits in pop culture and influence future movies.
Previously, we've covered Marvel, Mad Max, Shrek, Toy Story, Harry Potter, The Twilight Saga, The Lord of the Rings, Jurassic Park, Terminator, Pirates of the Caribbean, Hannibal, and we're about to jump into Batman. Previously, we've had Amy Johnston on our show, Ilram Choi, Nick Turner, and we're about to have Kevin and Will Hines from Screw It, We're Just Gonna Talk About Comics On, and Rachel Shank from the Infinity Podcast.
The Macaw Podcast Universe comes out every Friday.
And you can listen to us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcasts. That's the MPU, the Macaw Podcast Universe.
Welcome back to the show. I'm joined by Jesse and Victor, and Victor is going to be fixing Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales.
Doing my best.
Good luck.
Doing my best.
Vic, the show is yours. You can run with your pitch. Do you want to start with your casting, or do you want to do the story first?
I'll set up some story first.
Cool.
So, like I said before, it's about... The story is about letting go of what you expect so that you can get what it's really meant. Like, if you want an adventure, that's cool. But, like, don't take what's, you know, don't take it to a mythic level if it doesn't, you know, if it's not what it is. Like,
so there's no Poseidon.
You said what?
So there's no Poseidon?
There is no Poseidon, but there is Calypso, who serves as the main antagonist.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yes, she is the main antagonist, and she wants to reclaim all of the treasures and mystical items of the sea, because let's just say that was her, something she had given out, because she's chaotic anyway. And so she's, after everything that happened, she got imprisoned in a body for years. She's like, no, fuck that. Humans suck. I'm taking all my shit and I'm leaving. You know, good luck, best of luck to y'all. She's the villain. No, not villain. I mean, let me rephrase that. She's the antagonist. And okay, now I'll go to casting and directing all that. So I want the guy from The Revenant to direct this, Alejandro G. Iñárritu.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Iñárritu. Yep.
Because by the end of this movie, I want to lean towards more of a, and I also throughout this movie, I'm going to sprinkle more of like real piracy in here. Like, this is all a fucking, a farce. Like, by the third movie, it's in a good way, because I enjoy the third movie still. It's a farce, you know? Like, Barbossa is stabbed somebody between his legs, and he's like fighting back and forth, like left, right, while he's standing on top of the wheel. Like, it's a farce. But, you know, and that's cool. That's what it was. But if we're going to switch it up to either end it or take it on in a new direction, let's switch it up to be a little more realistic. Just show a little more of the real piracy, because piracy is horrible. Especially back then, they were murderers, rapists. They were really bad people, and we need to show.
There was no way to enforce against it.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Like, it was hard. It was just hard out there. And, like, you know, sometimes you got really unlucky and you just got, you know, disemboweled. But
it's hard out here for a
film. Exactly. You know how it is. But, yeah. So that's, I want to kind of lean into that. Anyway, I had the only real casting I had, because I brought back a lot of the original trilogy for the original group for reasons. But the only real casting I changed was Henry and Karina. I had them back. It's different characters, but like, I'll just keep their names. And also I have Jack Jr. in this one. Again,
as in Jack Sparrow's son?
Yes. Jack Sparrow's son. We're leaning into what the audience thinks they're going to want, so we can, you know, pull it back. Like, oh yeah, new trilogy, you know, everybody with parents. Yeah. Okay. Anyway. Henry He's very smart, played by Joe Keery from Stranger Things, you know, Steve.
Okay.
Yeah, I can see him being kind of a nerdy, smart, really intelligent, but like not very well sociable kid. That's, you know, that's Will and Elizabeth's kid. I wanted the kids to be kind of opposite of what their parents are normally most normally known for. Like Will and Elizabeth, they're pretty and, you know, they are good fighters. Henry's not that.
Gotcha. Okay.
You say you wanted to be a wannabe hero, a wannabe.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Jack Jr., played by Avon Jogia, you know, from Victorious. He's also on, he was on several things. Like he was on Victorious as a child and then kind of resurfaced recently. I can't remember.
He totally looks like the child of Jack Sparrow.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's why I had to get that. He's back from Victorious. I think he's part Indian, part white. Anyway, Jack Jr. is very earnest and charismatic, but he is not bright. He is a himbo. Now, Karina, Barbosa's kid, instead of being the smart one, she is a skilled fighter with the scrappy mentality. She's been on her own. She's had to, you know, survive in this, as we just described, lawless wasteland of the earth.
Right.
So she's a really good fighter, scrapper. I originally said Samara Weaving, but I also could kind of see Amanda Stanberg.
Okay.
Yeah. One of those two. I guess we'll have them fight it out in the casting room. But yes, okay, so that's...
I mean...
Very good.
I mean, sure. Have them fight it out.
Literally.
Why not?
Literally, sword fight. We gotta see who's good at who can do the stunts better.
Right.
Okay. Anyway, so the reason that the original Pirates of the Caribbean was so good is, like I said, it has a tight script. It's a very tight script.
Yeah.
It hits all the marks, classic screenplay. So what I want to do here is also focus on the script, classic script, tight script. But instead of at every plot point, I want to have it pertain to a different character. We'll see when we get there. Okay. Just a quick outline of each thing. Set up, you know, the beginning. Henry goes through life with his mom. They love each other. And also, you know, we get Calypso's motivation. Henry and Elizabeth spend time together. They're about to meet Will for their 10-year, you know, their 10-year anniversary kind of meet on this beach thing.
Right,
I always forget that they have that stupid rule of they only come back like for one day every 10 years.
Well, technically, if he just stood in buckets, he could come on shore anytime he wanted, because they do that in the third movie. But we won't talk about that.
That reminds me. So the ghosts in this movie can't travel on dry land. Well, what if it rains?
Right,
that's a good point.
Or what if
plot twist. Fuck it, whatever.
What if they wear shoes full of ocean water?
Mm-hmm.
There's got to be a way around this.
Yeah, what are all these loopholes? There's hella loopholes.
I'd love to have a story that's just about like finding loopholes for God's curses.
That's funny.
Where like some wise ass is like, you know, getting cursed by a god and like finds a way around it every single time.
It wasn't that a Rick and Morty episode where Rick is pulling?
Yes, it was.
He pulls
it was,
the curses
it was.
Out of cursed objects.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh yeah, yeah. That was one of my favorite episodes. That was fun.
Never mind, it's already been
it
done.
Was the devil.
Here's a monkey's paw, but it doesn't backfire. Good luck. You have 3 wishes.
That's so funny. That is so funny. I love that. Gotta love that show.
Oh man.
Okay. Anyway, Catalyst, what kicks it into action. Calypso interrupts their meeting and takes control back over Will because, you know, that's her curse. Elizabeth joins them to keep Henry safe, and, you know, Calypso demands it because I want to imply that she, you know, she wants to have company, people she's known before. Anyway, Elizabeth tells Henry to go live a normal life, not to pursue them. You know, just Leave it alone. We'll come and visit you when we can, but be normal. Avoid piracy. Yada, yada. The debate. Henry goes back and forth on what to do, because now he's an orphan. And then he meets Karina. She was tracking down her father, found out, heard stories about him and Elizabeth Swann and all the people he hung out with. So she was tracking each person down one by one. And so she runs into Henry and she convinces him to go to Jack for help. Again, leaning into what we expect to happen.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. And so again, Henry being smart, he's able to kind of figure out based on like letters and bullshit, whatever. This is the outline. So whatever bullshit we need to, he's able to figure out where Jack is, because Jack has been rumored he's retired, not sailing anymore. So
okay.
That's the debate. They go to find Jack, and the plot point one, break into act two, they meet Jack Sparrow. And he's back at Davy Jones' locker level of crazy, because he's, he lost the Black Pearl again. He's washed up, and he was already crazy to begin with, so.
Sure.
Yep.
Is the Black Pearl kind of like Mad Max's car? You just keep losing
yeah,
it?
Yeah, kind of.
Pretty much. I don't think he keeps it through a whole movie.
I mean, he had it all for the first movie, and then it got destroyed in, halfway through the second movie. Yep. It's not in the third movie, and then it gets blown up in like the first 5 minutes of the fourth movie.
Yeah.
So,
yep,
he's got really bad luck with cars, just like Jack has really bad luck with his boat.
Right.
Oh, speaking of Mad Max stuff, that's something I forgot to point out earlier. Not to totally disrail you, Victor.
Uh-huh.
The main Royal Navy guy from the beginning island where they're robbing him, that was the gyrocopter pilot from Mad Max.
Oh yeah. That's right.
Bruce something, I forget. But he's also, if you've ever seen the extended cut of Return of the King, he's the mouth of Sauron in one of the cut scenes. One of the like craziest characters from the lore. I just
that character.
It's
so cool to see him pop up and stuff. Oh yeah,
Bruce Spence.
There you go.
What a career.
He was also in the Matrix sequels as the train man.
Yep.
Oh wow, that's crazy. Jesus Christ.
He's odd looking fellow, but I think it works for his like character. Actually.
I mean, he gets roles.
Are we ever touching that third Matrix film?
Someday, sure.
But you kind of need to address Reloaded in relation to that.
Aaron already did.
Oh, so build off of that. Interesting.
Aaron did it.
Yep.
Hmm.
So back to the pitch. Sorry.
Okay.
To,
no,
to
that's fine. Yeah. I do.
On brand. We don't like talking about this movie.
This movie. I do want to check out that Matrix pitch, but we'll get back to that. Anyway. So, again, Jack is crazy to the point of uselessness. They can't get him. So, instead, they get Jack Jr. and the mentor and the farrier for this movie, Mr. Gibbs. Finally give him a shine.
Ah, wonderful.
Yes.
Thank you.
Which he deserved. He always deserved it. And so, yeah, he's going to be a mentor figure, one of the main characters. Fun and games. They... track down Barbossa. We show them finding them. We have to show them how they find him. Maybe Henry again, whatever. That's for the screenwriters. I'm just the outliner.
Sure.
But yeah, so the fun and games, I want to show them serving aboard Barbossa's ship. You show some pirate's life, and they're searching for artifacts to help them battle Calypso, because she's a god. and like I said,
so at this point, is Barbossa on board with their plan to help with the Calypso situation?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. They, the mind wants the seas to be reduced, made less mythical. But anyway, yeah. So, I want to show them. I want to show on life on the pirate's ship what it's like, how cruel it can be, how tough it can be, like the hard day to day work, and also. I think this is a good time because Barbossa is a fucking privateer. We said it in the fourth movie. Mm-hmm. I think it's a good time to harken back to, James Morgan, also known as Captain Morgan. of the Spice Rum.
Love it.
Who was he was also a pirate here who basically behaved. I mean, he behaved as a pirate. He did what he wanted. Even like when the English told him not to, he was still attacked. But he did it under English command and still acted like a pirate. So I think it'd be a nice kind of callback, you know, show like, you know, this is Captain Morgan. This is kind of how he was. Anyway, so yes, they collect artifacts, yada yada, have fun. Midpoint, they arrive at the they arrive at one artifact at the same time as Calypso, but before they can do anything, before they can actually like fight, gear up for a fight between the Dutchman and Barbossa's fleet, Calypso turns Barbossa, you know, by influencing the magic that's keeping him alive.
Oh, that's right. I forgot she brought him back to life. Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah. Yep. And like we said, like this fifth movie is like they just forget
exactly.
Everything. They just forgot so everything. Much. Like it's clearly. Oh god damn, man! There's so much they just threw out.
Yeah,
the
they said let's just not bring this back. Like why bring this back? why use our lore to our advantage anyway? So yes, so now Barbossa's on Calypso's side. Our main three and Gibbs escape from Barbossa and Calypso. They go, the bad guys closing in section. That can be, instead of the fight scene being between Calypso and Calypso, the Dutchman and Barbossa, it's our people trying to escape all of them.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. So that, and then, them escaping, them getting back. That's, the second half of Act Two, the bad guys close in section. So yeah, while they escape, they manage to get Barbossa's sword. So when they get back to Jack, they can free the pearl with, you know, the sword. And then that actually snaps Jack out of it. He captains a ship. I guess we can get the rest of the crew back too, and they sail off to save the day. Now, at the All Is Lost moment, plot point three, up against the Dutchman and Barbossa's fleet at the same time, when they only had the Black Pearl, they lose. And, you know, I actually originally said, faced with losing his ship again, Jack sides with Calypso. But I'm kind of wondering if he should just die and go down with the Pearl here. What do you guys think?
Like I said, like I think this is the point where you finally get rid of Jack Sparrow.
Yeah, that's a very valid point.
Allow the captain to go
like,
down with the ship.
Because if we're following the canon of the series, he's what, 60?
Yeah, he'd be old. He'd be rolled.
Like, he's old. Yeah, it's time to go.
Well, that, and if you're making the Star Wars comparison, this is the Harrison Ford moment, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, true.
Because he's kind of like the smuggler guy that's always got a plan, and he's kind of like morally gray.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, his moment to go down, maybe even defending his son, showing that, you know, he actually maybe came around and became a little nicer before he totally goes out.
Yeah, that's a good point, because I did forget to mention that Jack Jr. is earnest because of who his dad is and because he's not a good father. Like, basically, Gibbs raised him.
Oh, I like that. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, because he's Jack. Anyway. Okay, so yeah, Jack goes down.
It's got that Guardians 2 thing where Jack Sparrow's his father, but Gibbs is his dad.
Yeah, exactly. he might have been your father, boy, but ain't your daddy. So yes, that was the All Is Lost moment. The ship goes down. The four are. I said they were locked away, but you know they can be wherever. It doesn't matter. Things are bad. Dark Knight of the Soul. They all lament their failure, and they realize that, you know, they didn't need all this adventure. All they really wanted was to get their parents back. And then they kind of empathize with Calypso and realize that all she wants is her own shit back.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so they escape. They use this to kind of hoist themselves back up. And they get back into the fray to go get their parents back. They battle through a bunch of forces to get to Calypso herself. I think it's gonna be, first of all, we can bring the Kraken back, because I mean, why not? But also, I think it'd be fun to see like what Calypso can do as a god. Like, will she like make another maelstrom? Will she, you know? And it, she's a god; she can do anything. Anyway, so basically, the finale, they battle through everything to reach Calypso, and then we reach an emotional climax instead of an action climax. And as they're able to reason with her by relating to her, you know, so they're like, we just want you know, how you want to have everything you had, you want your possessions, your to feel whole. Like, we want our family, we want you know, we don't want them to be under, you know, under your slave, under your thumb. So yes, and then they, she calls off the kind of Scorched Sea campaign. Called it Scorched Sea instead of Scorched Earth.
Scorched Sea.
I forgot I did that. I hate myself sometimes. Anyway,
I mean, overall it works fine.
Yeah, I think so. It's okay, I guess. I felt like I could have did better. Anyway, so she allows her parents to go free. She takes the artifacts and leaves, and then this leaves a new status quo with the seas. A lot less mythical, a lot more like normal, like really, honestly, just different. Cause like nobody knows what to expect now. Is Calypso gonna, you know, continue to make storms or whatever? Or is she gonna back off and let, you know, let it be, let whatever happens, happens? Like, we don't know. But, and we also don't know what our kids are gonna do. We don't know what the parents are gonna do, but like everybody's ready to, like, they're together and they're ready to see what's next. Like, they just know that they don't want to be pirates like this no more. They don't want to go through shit like this no more.
So is the are you kind of like leaning into the idea that the magical objects or artifacts or whatever are like pieces of Calypso? Is that what we're insinuating here?
Yes, yes, exactly. Like, it's some stuff that she's like, you know, touched or given away, or, you know, stuff of her possession, stuff like that. Something, they're all things that mean things to her.
Gotcha. So it's like it's almost like a Voldemort thing, if Voldemort were able to be reasoned with.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, exactly.
An empathetic character. Okay, I'm following.
What were those things in the later Harry Potter stories that could kill Voldemort?
The Horcruxes. Oh,
yeah, the Horcruxes.
Yeah, the Horcruxes.
Yeah, Horcruxes.
Yeah.
I guess that's what it is.
Yeah, yeah, it could be that. And honestly, that could be a way to make you think that maybe you could kill her, like, you know, get the Horcruxes are like the specific ones, the specific artifacts, and make it work. But again, that's what the writers do. I gave them the thrust. I'll figure out the details.
Right, right. But, so like the compass and then the map and like the objects that we've seen over the series, mm-hmm, are the things that link back around to her.
Exactly. Yep. And we can go wherever we want to during the funding, or during any part of it. Honestly, just explore the world. Like, we've seen Indian pirates, seen Chinese pirates, African pirates. Like, you know, we can go anywhere, get all the artifacts we need, whatever, you know.
Oh yeah, that'd be fun. I would like to do a little world cruise. Would be a fun thing to do.
Yeah,
this sounds like a two-parter if you do that.
Sure,
I'd be down for a two-parter. I was thinking, you know, during while they were with Barbossa's crew, but that would be a lot of, like, you know, kind of teleporting, kind of.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's no point in showing 40 days at sea. It's going to be pretty monotonous.
Yeah.
Yeah. People don't realize how far apart these islands are.
Yeah.
That's one of the big negatives of this movie, is that everyone seems to get where they're going very, very quickly. And I'm like, no, it takes a long time to get where
exactly
you need to go.
Especially on a sailing ship that's going, what, like 6 or 7 knots?
Yeah, you're not moving very quickly.
And you're also at the mercy of the wind, so if it's just a chill day, you're just like, I guess we're stuck here today.
Yeah.
So overall, what your aim here is that you're reusing things that we've seen across the series and then kind of tying them into the overall plot. So it's like genuinely looking back and going, hey, what do these objects mean? Because you don't have to over explain anything, right?
Yeah.
But you still have the opportunity to reintroduce things that are familiar instead of having to create a whole new backstory that happened by accident, because Jack Sparrow is kind of the Iron Man of the Pirates movies, right? Like, everybody hates him, and
yeah,
so all,
yeah,
all of the antagonists just hate Jack Sparrow.
Yeah, everybody despises him, everybody hates him. It's like, well, why does he have such a positive reputation?
Honestly,
like, he's the best pirate ever. Well, if everybody hates him, why does he have a reputation that's positive?
Everybody hates him. Like, everybody's like, Jack Sparrow. Like, it's
Like, fuck that
it's
guy.
It's like the way they call it Spider-Man in the Spider-Verse. Like, everyone's like, Spider-Man.
Yeah. The absolute goddamn padding of him getting marooned on an island to get pulled into a marriage that was from an adventure that we didn't see.
What the fuck was that for? Like, why? Why? That upset me so much. No. It was so uncomfortable.
It's not like the movie would be hurt if it was taken
at
out.
All. No, not at all.
It'd be improved.
Not at all.
However little.
Like, to the degree that if Barbossa hadn't showed up in that scene, you could clip from them seeing the ghosts not able to come onto the island to putting the Black Pearl in the water and have no issues.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. You could just be like, oh, they just went to the other side of the island and the ghosts don't know.
It was literally pointless and not funny.
Also, how did the ghost know that they left the island?
Good question. Maybe the sharks were still out there looking for.
Oh, fuck it.
Also, I wanted to bring up this green screen of when Jack was getting dragged by the shark. My friends.
I've seen Sharknado.
That, my friends, God, is what happens when you don't pay your CGI artist enough.
No, like, that's what happens when you skimp on your budget and don't do it practically.
Yeah, because wow, that was bad.
They did it in Jaws in 76, dude.
Yeah. And it looks so much better.
They did literally the same shit in 76.
This was bad. Like,
fuck you, guys.
But anyway, I can't do nothing about the, you know, the director choice. I hope they spend money on that. But that was the gist of giving the audience almost what they want and then kind of dragging it away to show that, hey, maybe, you know, either end it here because it's a good ending point, or if you continue on, you continue on with something different, a more grounded.
Yeah, I like the idea of the tone that this is the end of the age of pirates, right? Because, mm-hmm. like, pirates just kind of got wiped away once the British Navy got big enough and had surrounded enough of the world, right? They just kind of dissipated very quickly.
Yeah, exactly. Couldn't compete forever.
They were just, there was no more safe harbors for them.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Can't fight forever.
And even these movies kind of imply that with, like, Tortuga being this, like, almost mythical last hold of pirates in the entire area. Like, the very first movie is about the decline of pirates. So
yeah, right.
It makes sense that, you know.
Yeah, and then the third movie, the British just take over Tortuga.
Right, exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah, they just take over Tortuga, and they're just like, oh, that's it. That's the end of it.
And I mean, they were talking so much in the third one about being the last pirate and the last, you know, when they're hunting us down, like, you know, like, and then the next thing you know, they're all fine and, you know, in the fourth one, just because you took down Cutler Beckett, like, who was useless.
He gets hired by the character. King in the fourth one, right? Am I misremembering that?
I think you're correct.
That's a, yeah, he meets King George the second, I think.
Correct. Yep.
I don't know. That's what I read on the Wikipedia page. I didn't bother with it.
Don't watch it.
I cannot be bothered. I don't care. I know Penelope Cruz is very pretty, but I just could not give two fucks.
Save yourself.
These are the kinds of movies that, like, the excuse is to have these kind of over-the-top swashbuckling scenes, but there's not even that much swashbuckling in this last one.
Yeah,
really?
And it's bad.
No, they mostly run away.
It is bad. Like, what they do have is bad. There's no good fight scenes. There's no good action scenes in this that I can think of. Like, there's a couple good action gags, I guess, like the guillotine, but
right.
Was there any good action scene that you guys actually liked?
Does Jack Sparrow ever get into a sword fight in this movie?
Kinda.
Towards the end on the ship, it's like but even then it's not presented like it's presented more like fist fighting than it is swashbuckling.
Yeah, it's all jokes.
Another thing I noticed was they really toned down the graphic violence for this one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You ever notice how they ever get into a sword fight and it always ends the fight by having the other opponent punch the other person? They never stab them,
right?
Yep.
Nobody gets stabbed in this movie as far as I could remember.
I think you're right. I can't think of any time that somebody actually like run a sword through somebody.
Well, there's a lot of threats of stabbing. Barbossa almost gets stabbed but then doesn't.
That's fun. And then just dies at the end for not much of a reason,
right?
Like I said, this feels like a Disney Channel movie.
Yeah.
Toned down violence, bad CGI, Actors that don't care. You know what? Like it's a Disney
you know
Channel
what?
Movie.
This was a yeah. direct. This was what would have been a direct to DVD Disney movie, Disney
yeah.
sequel.
Yes.
If they just if it wasn't yes. a big enough you know if it wasn't too big of a series, this would have been no direct to DVD sequel. That's
yep.
exactly
yep.
what it is.
Yeah, okay. Like because you compare it to like one of my favorite scenes from any of these movies is in the second one when Jack Sparrow. Orlando Bloom's character, or Will Turner and Norrington are all in that the wheel.
Yes.
It's like rolling across the island.
That
and
was such
like,
a fun scene.
Yeah, that's the kind of stuff that I want to see in these movies.
Yeah.
It's like over-the-top action set pieces.
Yeah.
And they're always so like interesting and creative. And then you get to this and it's like the ship opens up to look like a crocodile or shark mouth.
And it's all CGI. None
right.
of it's practical.
Right.
And it's like, and? Like, okay, that's one cool thing.
They open the ocean and they fight on a coral reef.
No, no, you're going the opposite way. Jesus Christ.
Boring.
Like, oh my God. The fight scenes.
Boring.
It was a lot of spinning in the actions. And, like, Jack, in the first movie, Jack Sparrow had a sense of danger still. Even though he was still silly. He was, like, you felt like, oh, he could betray it. He could betray you at any point. Like he kind of felt like Long John Silver in Treasure Planet. Is he in Treasure Island too?
Treasure Island.
Yeah, Treasure Island. Yeah. Like you know, somebody like it's not like overt, like right there danger, but like when somebody is like, if like if the tides turn, you might kill me.
Yeah.
And
well, it also goes to the fact that Johnny Depp at this point didn't care
yeah,
anymore.
Right.
Yeah, he was
right.
done.
He wasn't into it. Like, nobody was into it. Like, when your cast and crew are not into it, it shows
yeah,
on screen.
It showed.
It just shows. Like, this is a movie that was made to keep the rights and maintain the IP, not because somebody really felt like there was an interesting idea.
Yeah.
Right.
No, none of that. No so, interesting ideas,
this,
no new ideas.
It is what it is.
Was this the last, like, sword fighting, swashbuckling movie made? Has there been anything since this?
There's not much...
I think so.
In Star Wars?
Doesn't count.
That's all I could think of. They don't do a lot of sword fights.
Well, when the original Pirates came out, that genre was basically dead as
yeah.
well. Cutthroat Island had basically put a nail under the coffin
yeah,
on that.
And, then,
and well, it took forever for them to green light that.
And then they got lightning in a bottle.
I would say like Mask yeah. of Zorro was kind of like the brief gasp of air. For that genre.
I still have to see that movie.
Yeah. It's good. It's actually pretty good.
Yeah, Mask of Zorro is fantastic. The Legend of Zorro, not so much.
Is that the one where he's a cartoon?
No, they're both live action.
Well, not literally a cartoon, but...
Oh, you mean
yeah,
Goofy
yes.
as a character?
Oh, yes, yes.
Okay, gotcha.
Yes,
okay,
that's the
well
one.
Then, yeah, I'll watch Mask of Zorro then.
Yeah, the Mask of Zorro is basically a Batman movie. It's actually kind of cool.
Yeah, it's a Batman Beyond
yeah,
movie.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's the old Zorro training the new Zorro.
Oh, I really like that. Okay.
Yeah, it's a good one. For the second time, on brand for us, we're running very far away from Pirates of the Caribbean.
There's nothing else to talk about. The movie sucks.
The movie is a very, very bad movie.
Yeah.
And not in a fun way either.
Yeah.
I have no interest in fixing on Stranger Tides. We're just going to say this is the fourth movie. Victor's
yeah.
Pitch is the fourth movie. We can erase the last two.
Remember do you remember the guy that used to do what was it? The Ninja Critic from YouTube?
Oh yeah.
And he did a review of the second movie and he basically saw the third movie and said, so you know what, basically this third movie is the same thing as the second movie, so I'm just going to use that review again. And he just starts playing the review for the second movie or to review the
that's
third movie
hilarious.
That's funny
because it's the exact same thing.
That's really funny.
If I can find it, I'm going to drop it into the Discord, but yeah, it's yeah, this third movie is basically the same thing as the
yeah
second.
Well, I mean, two and three were basically like a 5-hour film. They're
yeah
they're
exactly.
a double
yeah.
parter. They're a two
yeah
parter,
and
for sure
while the plot isn't always cohesive, it's fun. Too long,
yeah,
but fun.
Overly long. There's a lot more parallels with Star Wars than I think I originally saw, but even to the point that Dead Man's Chest is a straight up cliffhanger. before you get into the last one. This was a fun little foray into the pirate series. I don't think there's a reason to fix the first three. God, I don't want to watch On Stranger Tides. And so you're
there's
lucky,
no point,
Vic.
Guys.
You got us to dip our toes into it. That's as far as we'll go.
I'll take that as the only pirates guess.
Yeah.
There you go. Dropped it in the Discord.
Dude, Ask a Ninja. That's some like OG YouTube shit.
That's going way back, 2007.
Oh, man, that was before I started YouTubing. speaking of YouTube, Face Off, the pitch meeting on Screen Rant just dropped a Face Off one.
Oh, I saw. Actually, I was watching that on the break.
Amazing. Amazing.
I think this is a good place to end this one off. Vic, thank you so much for jumping on and giving us this pitch. It sounds like the long and the short is just all the little strings that were left dangling from the original trilogy get pulled together into a generation hopping, world trekking adventure.
Yep. Time together. Get a nice grand adventure to finish off if you must after the third one.
It's the end of the age of pirates.
Exactly. Exactly. Yep.
It's got to end at some point.
Might as well start
here. Well, let's finish out with some plugs. Victor, anything you want to plug at this part of the podcast?
Once again, follow my Instagram and Twitter, VicJ_795, all lowercases. And I'm going to start posting more pictures, like as far as like, you know, photography pictures. I have been practicing my camera. I haven't gotten around to editing everything I've shot yet, so I'll be posting one picture soon, but that's it for now.
Wonderful. And Jesse, you host a few podcasts.
Yes, we have Split the Difference, where we take an original film, compare it to its remake. We just did Little Shop of Horrors the other day. That was a fun one.
Sounds fun.
We also have That Weird-Ass Game, where we discuss weird, unusual games. That's slightly off-season because I'm currently in Richmond, Virginia, working on a TV show, and I just don't have time to play games these days. It will come back, hopefully, once I am finished with the work on this show in about 2.5 weeks. And we also have Palette Cleanser, where we discuss good films. I think the next pick is yours, Seth?
Yes, we're going to be talking about Holes.
Yes, wonderful movie from the early 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
Was it early 2000s? Was it like 2003?
Yep, early 2000s. Very young Shia LaBeouf.
Whom very
That's
young.
Right, yeah, yeah, yeah. If you want to get in touch with me, just find me on Twitter at HardcoreBshot.
Perfect. And then as for me, I'll just plug our Patreon. You can hear extended and early access cuts of our podcasts on patreon.com/Montressor Media. Access is $1 a month. Your support is always requested and wonderful and helpful. So please give that a look and a link. Will be down in the description for you. From there, I think that's the end of this show. Thank you guys for being here.
Of course.
Happy
to
be here.
Fuck you, Vic.
I will apologize profusely for a while because this is a rough one.
sorry to do it to you, man. I really struggled with this one.
If it hadn't been for covering Little Shop of Horrors and getting two good movies in, it would have been a much more of a drag for me, I think.
It would have been a shit.
You would have melted down.
with that being said, this is the end of the show. Thank you for listening. I've been your Pitchmaster General, Seth.
Good night.